medications affecting blood pressure. We have different kinds of these medications that affect blood pressure. Among them, the most important ones we'll talk about here, you talk about the angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. We talk about the ARBs, the beta blockers, and many other ones that affect our blood pressure. That is, they help to bring down the blood pressure. There are many ways these medications work for us to achieve a normal blood pressure. It is important we know these ways these medications work for us. It is important we know their mode of actions. It is important we know their adverse effects, side effects, complications, and other interactions with drugs to drugs or food to food interaction of this medication. It is important that we know these things. So as such, these medications control blood pressure in different ways. There are guidelines that we need to know to make sure that we can be able to detect abnormalities in this medication control system. Now, among this medication, we will begin with the first group of this medication. That would be the ACE inhibitors. The ACE inhibitors. These ACE inhibitors are what we refer to as the angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. Angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. Now, when we did research, before you can understand what these medications do, you must understand what is meant by angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. Now, this medication, we talk about angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors. Angiotensin, it is a chemical that is found in the body that can cause us to have increased BP indirectly by causing vasoconstriction. That's how it works. So angiotensin as a medication or as a class of medications works for us by doing a common job. That common job is to block certain things from happening in the body. Because when those things are happening in the body, it leads to increase, it leads to increased blood pressure, which becomes hypertension. So blocking the effect of those occurrences lead to BP reduction. Take, for example, angiotensin. We have angiotensin 1 and angiotensin 2. Now, these ACE inhibitors, they come in, they prevent the conversion, because angiotensin 1 is converted to angiotensin 2. It's going to cause what we call vasoconstriction, meaning it narrows the blood vessels. And when these blood vessels are narrowed, guess what happened to us? We will have more force to pump against that gradient, that resistance that will be in the lumen of the blood vessels. That resistance that we're going to meet in the blood vessels can cause us to have increased BP. So angiotensin converting enzyme is the main cause for this resistance, because it will convert from 1 to 2. Converting from 1 to 2, 2 is a vasoconstrictor. Once it is converted from 1 to 2, there will be vasoconstriction. There will be blood vessel constriction. So when you take inhibitors, the word inhibitors means to prevent, to stop, to detour, to curtail. That's why it means inhibitor. So it inhibits, it stops. So angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors mean the enzyme that converts angiotensin 1 to 2 is being inhibited, meaning it's being stopped from carrying on that particular job. So that means we will not have the converting feature of these chemicals in our body or this enzyme. So basically, when you have increased blood pressure, meaning angiotensin is working, it's converting angiotensin 1 to angiotensin 2. It keeps doing that. And as that is being done in our body, it keeps increasing our blood pressure. So when you take the angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors, the ASCE inhibitors, they prevent that conversion. So when it is being prevented by these inhibitors, then it lowers our blood pressure. That's how these medications work. So if you have an idea on how they work, in the NCLEX, you're going to understand exactly how these things occur in the body and how can we put stop to it and what are other things we need to know about them. It's like a pathophysiology of a disease condition. A lot of times when we read this in message, the secret is to know about these disease conditions, to know their pathophysiologies. If you know about it, you understand how to work. Take, for example, like asthma. What happens in asthma? In asthmatic conditions, there are three things happening. There is narrowing of the airway, that's one. There is formations of histamines, that's two. And there is obstruction by mucus secreting in the airway. So three things occur in asthmatic condition. Mucus secretion in the airway, that's one. The airway will become inflamed, that's two, or will become obstructed, that's two. And three, there will be histamine formation in the airway. So to treat asthma, you need one, an antihistamine that will prevent histamine formation. You need an anti-inflammatory medication that will prevent the inflammation of the airway. And you need a medication that will reduce the swelling, which will be, that will prevent the obstruction, which will be like a bronchodilator that will come in and dilate the airway. So when you understand the formation of how asthma occurs in the body, you understand how this medication works for the body. And if you understand that, you are going to also understand how can we put in those nursing implications, those nursing considerations, those nursing management to help an asthmatic patient. That's what happened in this situation. So for these medications, they help to control blood pressure by preventing the conversion of angiotensin 1 to 2, because angiotensin 2 is a vasoconstrictor. So these medications, you have a lot of examples for these medications. The all majority of the time, this ends in pril, P-R-I-L. Like you have captopril, you have like lisinopril. All those pril medications, they are all called the ACE inhibitors. And there are basic things we must know about these ACE inhibitors, because these are some of the widest use medication within the US and the world at large. We must know them. You go to China, you see ACE inhibitors in China to treat hypertension. If you go to Nigeria, you will see it. Liberia, the Congo, every part of the world, doctors use this medication to treat hypertension. So these medications reduce production of angiotensin 2 by blocking the conversion of 1 to 2. And then they will increase the level of bradykinin. Now, they will increase the level of bradykinin, leading to vasodilation. Because bradykinin also is an enzyme in the body that can cause us to have vasodilation. You want to have a normal blood vessels. If you have a normal blood vessels, you're not going to have hypertension. That's why when you eat high cholesterol food, you eat fatty foods, the fats or the lipids in the food will find themselves settling in the lumen of the blood vessels. And when these fats settle in the blood vessels, they're going to cause blood vessel narrowing, because when they get there, they're going to cause they're going to occupy space. These spaces they're going to occupy will cause the lumen of the blood vessel to become narrow. That's why you're going to have hypertension when you have increased cholesterol. So bradykinin helps to also dilate these vessels. So when you take this medication, it blocks the conversion of angiotensin 1 to angiotensin 2. That's one. Two, this medication also increases bradykinins in our body. And bradykinins, they are also vasodilators. They help to dilate the blood vessel lumen, And also, this can also excrete sodium. You remember we talk about in diuretics, we said when you are taking diuretics, you do not combine it with ACE inhibitors, because diuretics work by also what excreting water from the body along with sodium. And these ACE inhibitors also excrete excrete from our body, they excrete water and sodium. So when you take together diuretics and these ACE inhibitors, it causes us to have more water loss, more sodium loss, which can lead us into also fluid volume deficit. That's what happening in this situation. So the third thing it does is it helps to sodium retention by action in the kidney. It also helps to retain for our sodium. And it reduces the pathological changes in the blood vessels and heart that result from the presence of angiotensin II and aldosterone. And by this time, you know the function of aldosterone, because we talked about it the other day, right? So these things will happen in the case of ACE inhibitors. These are basic things that you're going to understand, read them, and understand the function for this medication. Any question on these ACE inhibitors function? Any question? Then we look at the therapeutic uses, which include hypertension, heart failure, MI, myocardial infarction, diabetes and non-diabetes conditions. Also, it treats diabetes. It treats non-diabetic conditions like non-diabetic nephropathy, wherein the kidneys has a problem due to other conditions. And it's also good for patients at risk for heart problem. So it also good for patients who are at high risk for cardiovascular problem. And among this medication, the most important one that is for this heart problem and to prevent MI is the Ramipril. So Ramipril helps to prevent heart failure and other cardiovascular events that occur in the body. So Ramipril is one of the ACE inhibitors. It is mainly used to prevent MI, stroke, and death after you have had the first MI or you have had like TIA. So many a time, if a patient has TIA, doctor order for them Ramipril. So when you have had TIA, the transient ischemic attack, what we call the smaller stroke, TIA is transient ischemic attack. When you have TIA, we go in and try to give you Ramipril, which will prevent the bigger stroke, which will prevent the heart attack, myocardial infarction, which can also prevent death from this heart condition. Now, so these drugs might fall in the same category or the same class, but they all have such a different action, different uses on the body. Any question? Now, then we'll look at the complications. Complications are what we want to avoid. Sometimes they cannot be avoided. If they must occur, or if they occur, we want to make sure we have understanding about these complications. Take, for example, the first dose can call orthostatic hypotension. So the first dose of this medication, the ACE inhibitors, the first dose can cause orthostatic hypotension. So if the patient is already taking a diuretics, stop the medication for a short time until you start the ACE inhibitors. That's what I just said. So many a times we do not combine it with AC, not combine diuretic with AC inhibitor. What if the patient is having low sodium or low fluid volume? Because it's going to cause us more problem. But if we have to administer them together, if we have to administer them concurrently, meaning we have to administer one, then before we must always hold the medication and stop, and then start the AC inhibitor for at least 2 to 3 days. Then we'll go back and start the diuretics with it to create that balance. Monitor the blood pressure for 2 hours after you start the treatment. Tell the patient to change position slowly and to lie down if they feel dizzy, lightheaded, or they feel faint. So if they're having these symptoms, these are all symptoms for orthostatic hypotension. So they must take this precaution to get prevented from falls. Because falls is a big thing in a hospital. At home, fall can cause so many problems in our job or in our houses or where we live. Fall is not good for a patient. Nobody falls intentionally. So you fall unintentionally, and that can cause you to have severe problems to your body. Most of the head injury. Now, these AC inhibitors, one thing I'm going to remember also, there's a cough. Now, you remember we said bradykinin, right? We said bradykinin can be increased with AC inhibitors because bradykinin is a vasodilator. So because it is a vasodilator, when you take the AC inhibitors, it also increases the level of bradykinin. Now, bradykinin can increase cough. So when you're taking bradykinin, your cough reflex can be increased. So that's the reason why with bradykinin, you also have cough with the patient. So the patient will have increased bradykinin. Inform patient of the possibility of experiencing a dry cough. And if this occurs, what you do, stop the medication and notify the doctor. Or notify the provider and stop the medication. That's what you do exactly. It is common with this medication. You want to make sure, notify the doctor and stop the medication. Discontinue the medication. In the case of hyperkalemia is also one of the complications that with this medication because we said this AC inhibitors will prevent the excretion of potassium. It keeps potassium and it let go water and sodium. So with this situation, it can cause hyponatremia, low sodium, and it can cause hyperkalemia, high potassium. Now, if I may ask, what symptoms will you see from someone who is having hyperkalemia, increased potassium? What organ symptoms are you gonna figure out when someone is having hyperkalemia?
The heart.
Heart, right? So the heart. So the heart, you're gonna see the heart will show some other problems. You'll see the heart will sort of become different. There will be heart problem because potassium works directly on the heart. It works directly on the heart. So with potassium, increase or decrease in potassium, we're going to have dysrhythmia. Dysrhythmia is what we call irregular heartbeat. Now, for that reason, you want to make sure whenever there's a potassium on potassium level in the body, the first thing we'll do is we'll do a blood draw to do the serum potassium levels. And what's our normal potassium level?
3.5 to 5.0.
Okay, so it should be 3.5 to 5.0. Anything above 5.0 is hyperkalemia. Anything below 3.5 is hypokalemia. So the level of potassium should be between 3.5 to 5.0. Now, then we said rashes. There can be rashes with this medication. We can have rashes. And we can also have dysgeusia. Dysgeusia is altered taste. Our taste cannot be the same. We'll have different tastes in our mouth when we are on this medication, which is called dysgeusia. So when you are on AC inhibitors, you can be having these tests, and you can also have rashes on the skin. This occurs with captopril. Now, every time we discuss a medication side effect or either effect, when we link it to a particular medication, make sure another medication. So, ramipril can prevent heart attack, myocardial infarction, stroke after patient has had TIA. They can take ramipril. Captopril can cause dysgeusia and rashes in patient who is on captopril. Now, patients should inform the provider if these changes occur. This adverse effect will stop with the having faith, you want to stop the medication. That's the that's what we do. You stop the medication, discontinue the medication with this adverse effect. So the patient should inform the HCP or the provider, and then you go ahead and stop the medication. That's what happened with this with captopril. Now, any question?
Any ACE inhibitor can cause angioedema, and until the lip swell up the lip, the tongue.
It might cause that. But discontinue the medication. So these are things I want to make sure we understand about these medications. Any question? Now, then we look at the next medications. Now, the next medication, we call them the ARBs. ARBs are what we call the angiotensin II receptor blockers. Now, these ARBs, they work in different style, but with the same goal of reducing the blood pressure. Now, these are angiotensin II. We said angiotensin II are vasoconstrictors. Because of this effect, they constrict the blood vessels. They are capable of causing us hypertension because they cause vasoconstriction, so they can cause hypertension. For that reason, angiotensin II receptor blockers, these medications block the action of angiotensin II in the body, which result in vasodilation as excretion of sodium and water, which can decrease the release of aldosterone. So that's how they work in the body. So these ARBs, they block the angiotensin II. The ACE inhibitors, they block the conversion, meaning they block the conversion at the beginning of this entire process. Because at the beginning of the process, one is converted to two. Y2 will cause the vasoconstriction. So when you take ACE inhibitors, they will block that process from one. Now for the ARBs, there is no conversion. It has already been converted. So the ones that have already been converted will cause hypertension by causing vasoconstriction. So when you take ARB blockers, or ARB, or which we call the angiotensin II receptor blockers, these blockers, they will go at the receptor site. The site at which the conversion occurred, that site is where they go and block. That's how we call them, the ARBs, angiotensin II receptor blockers. So they block the reception site of where the entire party is going on. Where they go to party is where these blockers go and block those areas. When that occurs, the action will result in vasodilation. Also, it results in sodium and water excretion because will decrease aldosterone. And aldosterone is another enzyme that increases water and sodium loss in the body. So by decreasing aldosterone, that will hold water. So by decreasing aldosterone, we are letting go sodium and water from the body. That's the function of aldosterone. Now, it also used to treat hypertension, heart failure. Now, these are called the sartan medication, the SARTAN, sartans. When you hear most of the medication are going to end in sartan, SARTAN, they are ARBs. PRILs, ACE inhibitors, SARTAN, ARBs medication. So for these ones, that treat heart failure, they will include the valsartan and the candesartans. Valsartan and candesartans are the two most common ones that treat heart failure. Then you have stroke prevention. Losartan. Losartan prevents stroke occurring. Again, if you've had TIA, a mini stroke, the smaller stroke, to prevent you from having the bigger stroke, which is the CVA, we give you Losartan, L-O-S-A-R-T-N, Losartan. Now, then we also have, it can cause delayed progression of diabetic nephropathy. Any kidney failure that derives from diabetes, diabetes mellitus, that will cause kidney problem, because kidney problem is one of the diabetes complications. So you're going to have nephropathy is a complication that caused by diabetes mellitus. You have a retinopathy, you have neuropathy, you have nephropathy, you have this foot or this also on the body that cannot get healed. All of these are all complications from diabetes. Among them, the nephropathy, the ones that cause the kidneys, nephron, to become ill, that we're going to have kidney problem, is what we call diabetic nephropathy. And this can also reduce, medication can also reduce the progression of diabetic nephropathy. It also protects against myocardial infarction, stroke, and death from cardiac causes in individuals unable to tolerate ACE inhibitors. Now you see, so these ARBs, they work almost just as how the ACE inhibitor work. That means a patient who cannot take ACE inhibitors can take ARBs as an alternative. Now also, valsartan reduces death following an acute MI. So after acute myocardial infarction, that will put you on valsartan medication, which can help to reduce the risk of dying from heart attack. Now, then we have these complications. Someone talk about angioedema. Advise the patient to what? To observe for the symptom of this angioedema, because it is one of the most commonly seen complications. You have the skin swelling, you have the tongue, the pharynx, which can cause death, because the tongue gets swollen up and blocks the airway, blocks the pharynx, air cannot go in or air cannot come out, then death is imminent. So you want to make sure you notify the doctor for these symptoms. Wheals are skin elevations, just like papules, but they are more defined than those ones. Now, so treat severe effect with epinephrine. So if you have severe angioedema, treat with epinephrine and discontinue the ARB medications. It causes also fetal injury. Advise any childbearing woman or who is pregnant in the second and third trimester against this medication, because it's going to cause problem. It's going to cause fetal injuries. Advise the woman of any childbearing age to use contraceptives while on this medication. They have to use these preventive measure to prevent the occurrence of fetal injuries. Any question on the ARBs? Any question? The next medication that helps to treat hypertension is calcium channel blockers. Now, calcium channel blockers, they are a group of medications that help to block calcium pathway. Calcium entering into the blood will lead to vasoconstriction. Now, every time you have hypertension, there are different reasons why we have hypertension. There are different reasons, like from kidney failure, like from increased cholesterol, from other heart conditions, lot of different things. The food you eat, everything can give you different issues. That's why when you have increased beep blood pressure, we do not just run and start getting this medication. It is very near to start administering these medications to patients after they have had hypertension. So one day I always ask my friends from Liberia when they come, oh yes, my mom is sick, she's on this medication. And I ask, did she do laboratory tests? Did she do her blood chemistry? Because unfortunately, we do not have the resources to do so many laboratory tests in Liberia or in Africa, certain part of Africa. The tests are available, but sometimes the cost of the tests prevent us from doing these tests to know exactly what's the cause of our problem before taking treatment. Somebody was sick, they had hypertension, they went to the hospital, and then they put it on beta blockers, put it on ARBs, put on any medication without knowing what is the cause of the condition. So depending on what is the cause of the hypertension, that's how we recommend, that's how we prescribe a particular medication. Now, these ones, if you do the BP is high, we go ahead and do a complete metabolic panel or blood chemistry. We do blood, urine, everything to know what's the cause of the high BP. Depending on the origin of the blood pressure being high, that's how we administer medication. For example, calcium cannot block us. If someone is having high level of calcium in the body, they might have high BP, because calcium into the blood can cause vasoconstriction. So when you take calcium channel blockers, this medication will block the flow of calcium into the bloodstream. That's how this medication works. So they block the flow, of calcium into the bloodstream, which will allow to have vasodilation, which will allow to have smooth muscle movement. The smooth muscle and the artery will be very smooth and allow the free movement of medication of blood within those vessels. So that's what happened. But unfortunately, we do not have the means to do these things. It is important to look at them. Now, then we have examples for this medication class. One example is verapamil. So verapamil, it is a very good medication, but we did the cardiovascular system, when we did EKG, we saw in EKG, we talk about verapamil, we talk about amlodipine, we talk about adenosine, we talk about digoxin, we talk about amiodarone. These are all cardiac medications that help to create balance in our heartbeat. So examples include nifedipines, amlodipines, verapamil. These are all examples for these medications. And it is important that we make sure we look at these medications, we read about them, we know what they are, why they are being administered. You have the diltiazem, you have the nicardipine, all of them for all this for all this class. Now, let's look at nifedipines. Nifedipines acts on the arterial of the heart. The arterioles are smaller blood vessels that are next to arteries. So you have arteries, you have arterioles. So arterioles are the smaller blood vessels that connect that is attached to the bigger one, which are the arteries. So nifedipine works mainly on the artery of the heart. When you have heart condition, increased BP driving from the heart, you take nifedipines. It helps a lot. Then you have verapamil and you have diltiazem. These two medications, they work by blocking calcium into the myocardium. The myocardium is the main part of the heart. It is the heart muscles. So when you take these two medications, one of them, they block calcium from entering into the heart myocardium. They also, the SA node and the AV node, which lead to decreased force of contraction and slowing of the rate of conduction through the AV nodes. These two medications are on they are all cardiac disrhythmia medication. They can treat atrial flutter. They can treat atrial fibrillation. They can also treat supraventricular tachycardia, SVT. Now let's take for example. We said that this medication, we said the blood calcium from entering in the SA and the AV nodes. Because if calcium enters into the SA and AV nodes, it increases the force of contraction in the heart, which will increase the firing of the AV and the SA node. Because the SA node is the natural pacemaker of the heart. Before your heart starts to beat, lop, dop, lop, dop. Every time the heart begins to beat, lop, dop, the pacemaker of the heart is working. And when you hear a lop, dop, meaning blood has entered the heart, blood has entered the right atrium of the heart. So that right atrium is where you have the AV node. So the AV node is situated at the top portion, at the entry point of the right atrium. Because when blood enters through the AV, through the SA node, they call it the sinus atria node. It is the natural pacemaker. So this natural pacemaker of the heart produces a normal heart rate between 0 to 100 for adults. So when you're an adult and you're having the normal heart rate, which we call the pulse rate, is between 60 to 100. That is the normal pulse, which is normal cardiac rate. If it's above 100, it becomes tachycardia, increased heart rate. If it's below 60, it becomes bradycardia, decreased heart rate. So for this situation, this medication to control the heartbeat. Now the SA node is the first pacemaker, which is a natural pacemaker. Now, which gave us that beat? If the SA node is malfunctional for any other reason you have the SA node malfunctioning, the AV nodes comes to play. Now the AV nodes will produce a heart rate, but the heart rate that is produced by the AV nodes will not be as compared to the SA node, because the SA node is the main one. So if the SA node is not functioning, the AV node comes to work for the SA node. Now, the AV node will produce a heart rate. It will not be normal heart rate. It will produce a heart rate between
40 to 60.
That's right. So it will produce a heart rate between 40 to 60. So because the SA node that produces the heart rate between 60 to 100 is not working correctly, or is not working adequately, is failing us, so the AV node will come in to produce a heart rate between 40 to 60. So Rita is right. Thank you for the correction. So it will produce that heart rate. Now what happens in that situation? So you will still live. You have a beat, but you have a bradycardia heartbeat. Now, if these two are not working, other ones will come to play. The Purkinje fibers, the bundle of Hayes, they also come in to galvanize what little resources they have to produce a heart rate. And that's when you become symptomatic. So then we give these medications, amlodipine, we give rapamil, this other medication. If this cannot help us, then you will end up having a pacemaker. The pacemaker is that little metal panel they put in the heart to touch the heart, to wake up the heart. The heart is supposed to contract to release blood and to receive blood from the body. That's how it works. So this medication, verapamil and diazepam, the function mainly on the heart myocardium, that's one. The function on the heart SA and AV node by blocking calcium flow into those heart portions. If those portions have a decreased flow of calcium, it leads to decreased force of contraction. And a decreased force of contraction will lead to a decreased blood pressure in our body. So decreased heart rate will cause this thing to occur. Now, these two medications are cardiac dysrhythmic medication. They also treat cardiac dysrhythmia. which include atrial fibrillation, atrial flutter, and supraventricular tachycardia, SVT. Any question on this medication?
Amado, medication you treat the atrial condition, but not the ventricular condition, right?
It treats supraventricular tachycardia. It treats both atrial and ventricular condition, depending on anyone that leads to low heart rate, that will lead to high heart rate, you serve it helps to reduce the heart rate. That's how they work. Now, then we have these complications. One is you will have acute toxicity. Now, because we got to monitor the level of this medication in the body. If we have a high level, they're going to cause toxic effect. That's why when it is high in the body, excessive doses of this medication can cause high acute toxicity. It becomes affected. So in addition to blood vessels, it is also affected. The heart will become affected.
I have a question.
Monitor vital signs and the ECG. Provide gastric lavage and cathartics if needed. You want to administer norepinephrine, calcium, lidocaine, and isoproterenol, and also IV fluid. What's the question?
Yeah. What if you are getting a patient with AC inhibitor,
mm-hmm.
which excludes sodium and water
mm-hmm.
out of the body,
mm-hmm.
and calcium channel blocker is help block the calcium. So can you combine these two medications?
You could combine them. In some cases, like someone is having like a aggressive hypertension, it can be combined. They can combine on two or three different medications that will treat this condition. But it depends on the condition. Sometimes the doctor will give it a different interval. Because I remember a patient who had hypertension, very aggressive. One time I used to work with a doctor who ordered for the patient beta blockers, diuretics, Tylenol diuretics, and also gave them the ARBs. So it's possible, but it depends on the doctor's preference. It depends on what happened to the doctor. That's what it depends on. So these are things you want to make sure and just it happens, it's possible, but it depends on the condition that causing the hypertension. So now, there will be toxic effect of the medication, which we look at the EKG, will tell exactly what happened to the patient. We want to make sure we do gastric lavage. It is a G-tube, an NG-tube put into what to enter the stomach. We can give cathartics. Please know what these things mean. Cathartics, gastric lavage. We can administer norepinephrine, we can administer lidocaine, we can administer isoproterenol, we can also give IV fluid, we can also give calcium. These are things you're going to administer when these things are happening to the patient. Any question? Lastly, now these beta blockers are also another anti-hypertensive medications. So you have labetalol, metoprolol, atenolol, the LOL are beta blockers. So you have, these are one of the most commonly used anti-hypertensive medications in our setting. Metoprolol, to be specific, is used to decrease reflex tachycardia. You want to monitor for excessive slowing of the heart rate when you administer it. So beta blocker can help to reduce heart rate. Now, when you administering clozaril is a psych medication that can cause us to have increased heart rate. Some of these psych medication can also cause increased heart rate. So you will more often see doctors order Indira, or call propranolol. When the doctor is ordering this medication, that will increase the heart rate. So they can also help to decrease the heart rate in this situation. You want to make sure cimetidine, ranitidine, and grapefruit cannot be administered. Grapefruit will lead to toxic effect of this medication. So it will increase the effect of this medication. You want to make sure that the grapefruit juice cannot be administered with this medication. Likewise, ranitidine, the H2 receptor medication, right? It's H2, right? So ranitidine, some of that thing cannot be administered with this. They are all for also medication. They are PUD medication. They can be used for PUD, but they cannot be administered with beta blocker because they're going to increase the toxic effect of beta blockers. Monitor for the indications of these complications. For example, they will have decrease in blood pressure. They will have increase in heart rate. You can have flushing. You want to avoid the concurrent use with cimetidine and ranitidine. The concurrent use will cause serious problem. You want to avoid that. Then you have verapamil. You're talking about which is an ARBs. Verapamil can increase the digoxin levels, increasing the risk of the digoxin toxicity. Monitor for the.
It's not ARB medication. It causes channel blockers.
I'm sorry. Calcium blockers. So the verapamil, which is a calcium channel blocker, we just talked about, is a calcium channel blocker. We just talked about. We say that we cannot use it along with digoxin because it will increase the digoxin toxic effect. You want to monitor the function. You want to make sure you monitor the signs of bradycardia and full symptoms of AV blocks, such as reduced ventricular rate. So there will be reduced ventricular rate when it's administered together. You want to advise the patient not to alter this medication. It comes in PO. You cannot alter them. Altering them will cause problem. It might not work. So you cannot chew it. Neither you can crush it. You cannot chew, you cannot crush this medication. If you do that, meaning you have altered the form of the medication, which would not work. If the pulse rate is less than 50, you want to make sure you hold the medication. And also if the BP systolic is below 90, you cannot administer this medication. Now for these things, you will just read it and pass by them. In the end, they will ask you this question and they will bring scenario wherein you're taking this medication, the BP is this amount, the pulse rate is at this level, and they'll ask you, what would the nurse do? And then if you do not read with taking notes on these things, just read through them. You will see them in the book and pass through them. But importantly, you will miss some important part of the medication. Any questions?